This podcast is a part of the Carbon Almanac Network of Podcasts.
Hi, I'm Christina. I'm from Prague.
Hi, I'm Jen, and I'm from Canada.
Hi, I'm Olabanji, and I'm from Nigeria.
Hello, I'm Liki, and I live in Paris.
Hi, I'm Brian, and I'm from New York.
Welcome to Carbon Sessions, a podcast with carbon conversations for every day with everyone from everywhere in the world. In our conversations, we share ideas, perspectives, questions, and things we can actually do to make a difference. So don't be shy and join our Carbon Sessions because it's not too late.
Hi, I'm Jen.
I am Gwen.
Gwen, it's so great to meet you today. I'm so happy that you can come and have this conversation on the Carbon Sessions with us about your new book. And before we get into your book, I want to ask you, have you always loved food?
Always loved food. And I loved the attention I got when I made food. So that was kind of, you know, I have four siblings and I would get a lot of attention from them and their friends. And so I started getting, you know, oh, okay.
It's so, Neighborhood chef, were you?
Well, I knew I wanted to do something in food. I really did. And I love food and I love writing about food, talking about food, you know, so it's always been a big thing.
And so was that from a very young age?
As long as I can remember.
Wow.
I grew up in the Bay Area, a small town called Petaluma, which is north of San Francisco. But my family went into San Francisco quite a bit. And, you know, as any city, San Francisco is known for certain kinds of food. And it was just always so exciting to go in and the clam chowder and the breads and the ravioli and all the different, you know, ethnic, a bagel. I had a bagel for the first time as a young teenager. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So something so simple now that my daughter has bagels all the time. But it was to me like, oh my gosh, it's the most amazing thing. So yeah.
Absolutely. One of my favorite restaurants ever is in San Francisco, the Stinking Rose. I don't know if you know it.
Of course.
All about garlic.
All about garlic.
All about garlic. We have their cookbook. We loved it so much. Oh, but that's good. Well, so is this your first book that you've written? And when did you get the idea to write it?
Well, this is actually my fourth cookbook.
Okay.
And my publisher, we were working on another book, and my publisher had a dream, and she saw the cover in her dream. And she said, Gwen, I just can't get this idea out of my head. You know, we'll do it as just an ebook because, you know, save the planet and the trees. And she said, I just see the plantastic. And I literally wrote the first draft in like 5 days. I was up with my mom in Petaluma and she was not feeling well. And I was kind of taking care of her and just hanging out. And I wrote it very quickly. And once my publisher, Judy Proffer, saw it, she was like, oh no, this has to be a book. This can't just be an ebook. This is way too good to just do the ebook. So we started working on it and it's been amazing. It's been an incredible journey.
How long did it take you?
Well, I mean, from start, like literally the first draft was 5 days and then it was many, many, many drafts. And then it was going to come out in 2020. And we know what happened then. And so, you know, I mean, the thing is that, you know, you look at this world and you say things happen for a reason. And you can really see in this case, had it come out in 2020, I wouldn't have had a relationship with Alice Waters, who wrote the quote for the back of the book. I wouldn't have had, you know, a lot of knowledge and a lot of different things that have allowed me to open doors for me. So it probably would have come and gone in 2020. We couldn't do events because of the pandemic. So I think that it needed to come out when it came out so that it could have the life of its own, you know? So, yeah.
And can you tell us who this book is for. I know it's about plants, plant-based food, but who is this book for and what's your passion around that kind of cooking?
Well, I think this book is for anybody who's curious about plant-based food. And I'm not saying become a full-on vegan or, you know, change your whole lifestyle. I'm just saying I'm inviting you to come into the kitchen and look at plants in a different way. We all can use more plants in our diet. And so to be able to, you know, I had one client who said to me, yeah, I love that salad that you did. And I loved it with a steak on top. Okay, if that gets you to the green, I'm okay with that, you know. I mean, we can all use more plant food. And I think that it's really approachable. I wanted it to keep it approachable because a lot of these books you go into and it's 10 ingredients you've never heard of. And you have to go to this health food store or this store or this specialty store. I wanted it to be pantry and supermarket available so that you could just actually do these recipes.
So that it's easy for people.
Yeah.
You're easier. Yeah. So the planet picture on the front, what was the vision? Did you satisfy your publisher's vision of what she was dreaming about here in the with the world on the front?
Oh, totally satisfied you. And more. I mean, some of the best ideas start out as kind of like, oh, by the way, you want to work on this? And then it ends up being the thing, you know? So it was very, very organic and wonderful. And the book came together very organic and wonderfully. Here we are. I mean, it's great. You know, I get all kinds of people I've met at different signings and events who have all these different, you know, thoughts and ideas and, you know, what they think plant-based food is. And then like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize you could make it so delicious. I'd be eating salads all the time if you'd come over and make the dressing. And I'm like, you can make it. The recipe's in the book. It's really easy. So, yeah.
It's fantastic. And there seems to be a shift towards more plants in at least, you know, where I live, there seems to be a shift toward mm-hmm. more plants. And when we're talking about, you know, reducing carbon emissions and we're talking about looking after the health of the planet and the health of the people, what are some of the benefits that you've become aware of with the plant-based eating?
Well, I think the benefits are everything you just mentioned and everything that is good for your body. I mean, you can just feel, like if you do a green smoothie, you can just feel it going down through your body and you feel the energy. You feel the energy of the plants and you feel good. And I think that how many times have we eaten something that's sugary or, you know, high in fat, whatever, and we're like, oh, I feel terrible. Well, I think the complete opposite when you eat plant food is that you just feel so good and you feel, you know, you can feel the nutrition and you can just feel it in your body. It's amazing. And if you make it taste good, all the better.
Absolutely. I think it's becoming less out there and more common.
Well, absolutely. In 2015, I wrote a book called The Lotus Kitchen, Everyday Vegetarian Recipes to Nourish Your Yoga Practice and Inspire Mindful Eating. And I wrote it with my yoga coach. It's all plant-based. There's maybe one recipe where there's an option for cheese, but it's really plant-based. And my publisher said, you know, we can't do a vegan cookbook. It has to be vegetarian. Vegetarian, I can sell vegan. And then a few short years later, it's like, you know, everything's wanting plant-based. Times have changed and people are really open to it now. And, you know, once you see the benefits and how you feel, and it just makes it all the better.
One of my co-hosts, Leaky, had a couple of questions that she wanted me to make sure I ask you. One of them is about batching. And she said, batching is boring, so how do you make it interesting? Batch cooking. And do you do that in this cookbook?
Well, you know, I don't really do it in this cookbook. I mean, you can absolutely batch cook. You can double, triple the recipes and batch cook. I like to eat a variety of different things, so the idea never really appeals to me, you know. So I would rather do smaller because I love different flavors and textures. And, you know, I'm not one to like eat a bowl of oatmeal every morning, you know. I'll have coffee every morning.
Yeah.
It's a little different.
I'm the same.
I do work with the Edible Schoolyard Project, and we do 700 breakfasts and lunches a day. So that's kind of batch cooking.
And what project is that?
It's the Edible Schoolyard Project, which was founded by Alice Waters. And it's a scratch kitchen. So we make fresh scratch lunches and breakfasts 5 days a week for the students. And good food. I mean, really good food.
Wow. That's amazing. And then is that in one school or one?
Well, it's one school, Larchmont Charter, but they have four different campuses. So we cook for two of the campuses right now. And it's everything from, you know, pasta marinara to, you know, but everything is freshly made in our kitchen.
Wow. I bet that makes a difference.
It makes such a difference. I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, when my daughter was going through school and she would get these, you know, prepackaged lunch things, and you know, she really wanted to do the school lunch because all her friends were doing the school lunch, and she just couldn't do it after a few days. She's like, it's just horrible. It's disgusting. And no child deserves that. Every child deserves. It should be a right and not a privilege. It should be every student should get a fresh meal. And, you know, they don't like some of the things, and sometimes some of the greens, they don't want to eat that. And I have watched kids go from, I don't eat salad, to, look, Chef Gwen, I'm eating my salad. And it's really nice to see how they grow and evolve by, you know, having this good food. I mean, we buy produce from local farmers, and, you know, they'll see the one of our farmers pushing the dolly to the kitchen with crates of fresh fruit and vegetables. And they get to see that, and they get to see how good it is. And they get to see that it comes from the ground. And we also have cooking and gardening classes. So they get to really see and experience. And if they're doing something in the cooking or gardening class, we kind of try and coordinate lunches around it. If they're studying something in history, we'll come up with something. We did, you know, something for, we did ramen for Lunar New Year. So we're always trying to kind of do different things that gets them curious and has them, you know, wanting to know, wow, this is really good. And the parents are always coming, I don't know what you do, but my kid's eating whatever, salad every single night now. And, you know, they call the marinara sauce the magic sauce. So it's great.
That is amazing. And what a thing to introduce that many young people to, you know, a lifelong habit, a lifelong interest and curiosity about food, and to expand mm-hmm. their taste ranges. And then I bet they do so much better at school when they're eating amazing food.
I think so. I mean, it's got to go hand in hand, right? I mean, if you can't study when you're hungry, you can't study when you're eating junk, you can't focus as well when you're eating that kind of stuff. So, you know, as we learn and grow, I mean, it used to be you sent your kid with apple juice and that was really healthy. And then they've come to realize that a lot of apple juice isn't as healthy, that a lot of the sugary drinks aren't as healthy as they thought. So, you know, we're learning and evolving every single day and how we're allowing kids to eat and you know, just expanding their palate. It's really great.
That's fantastic. I have the other question that Leakey had was that you were a caterer, or you are a caterer on a film set. Is that still the case?
So yeah, I've been on film sets. I don't cater as much now as I did pre the pandemic. But yeah, I've worked on all kinds of events and films, and it's great. I had the experience of working on a movie, and you're there every day for, say, 6 weeks, 2 months, just the happiness and the people, like, oh my gosh, this is so good. It's so healthy. I feel so good. And then you get all of the requests and the, you know, craziness and the, I had a one guy, they wanted him fed very, very well because he was I think he was the cinematographer. And they really wanted to make sure. They were like, he has a really strange diet. He has a really strange diet. And I'm like, what is it? And it's like, vegan paleo. I was like, vegan paleo? What? But, you know, I was able to come up with things. You just do the plant-based, you know? You're just not doing high fats, and you're just doing the plant-based thing. And, you know, he loved everything. So it was really good.
That's fantastic. And have you noticed that the requests have changed over time?
Totally. Totally. The requests have totally changed over time. And people are more aware. And you get some people that have really strange ideas of what healthy diet or whatever. And, you know, you just kind of go with it. And I also think, and I can only speak from my personal experience, that the food's gotten a lot better, too. And I can tell you, when I first started plant-based food, somebody asked me to do a dessert party. And I was literally on the phone with my mother crying, these vegans are ruining my life, you know? And I'm like, I mean, I'm a butter and eggs and sugar. And, you know, I made one very successful dessert out of about five. And there was a little kid who literally took a bite of the cookie and spit it out. And he said, Mommy, this is gross. So I was watching all this going, oh my gosh, you have got to up level your game. And now I think, oh my gosh, that's so crazy. But, you know, but we didn't know. I mean, I was playing all the time with different concoctions and different, you know, well, how do I get a rise if I'm not using eggs? And how do I get the texture if I'm not using butter? And how do I get the, you know, so it's practice, practice, practice. So that's why the book is so good, because it's all the years of practice and epic fails. I mean, epic fails.
Our family is such a mixture of, I have a whole bunch of allergies, and we have vegetarians, we have vegan, we have a FODMAP diet, people who can't have, you know, garlic and onion. Mm-hmm. There's like four or five of us who can't do gluten, and I'm allergic to nuts, peanuts, and soy. So when you're trying to cook for this group of people, it's, we have little signs on everything, and you know, this has this in it and this doesn't have this in it. And I've adapted really, really well to being able to cook without eggs we still eat eggs sometimes, but we get them at the farm gate kind of thing. Right, exactly. And when we do cook things like birthday cake, I often will get the gluten-free cake mix, and then we'll use an egg replacer and oat milk and stuff like that. And they still taste really good. Mm-hmm. But we're subbing out all the time, and we have what we call fake food. So we have fake butter, and we have fake, you know, because you have to, you know, when you have that many variables going on, we have to get really creative. Mm-hmm. We cook a lot also and experiment a lot.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And it's a challenge, but it's getting easier, I find. Yeah. One of the things I discovered a few years ago is aquafaba. Have you worked with that?
Aquafaba is great. People thought I was crazy. And aquafaba is great. It's a wonderful, wonderful substitution for a lot of things. Yeah. And it's, yeah, it's amazing. You want to tell people what it is?
There's a whole.
What?
You go ahead.
It's the juice that comes in canned garbanzo beans, and it whips up like whipped cream. It's incredible. So you can sub that out for a lot of things, you know, and make and keep it really plant-based. Of course, I do mainly fresh beans, but I do buy cans of garbanzo beans just for the aquafaba.
Yeah, we do the same. And they're sometimes called chickpeas. And same thing. Yeah. And I've made meringues with them. Mm-hmm. I haven't tried too many. I've made like what do you call that, where you have a giant meringue and then you put custard and you put the fruit on top of it.
Oh, yeah, like a pavlova.
Can't remember what that's.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, pavlova. And yeah, it makes for a cool dessert. And most, you can't really tell.
No, it's crazy. And when you tell people that it's
beans.
And that you said you just recently made something?
Yeah, that fake, you know, well, see, there's that word again. I should stop using that word because it's all real food. But I recently learned how to make, with plant-based food, there's a lot of processed or manufactured things that you can buy that are very quite expensive. Mm-hmm. And so there's a bit of a, you know, should you spend $8 on that thing? Or if you're trying to replicate something that is animal-based, what's the point? Right? Why are you trying to make fake meat? Why are you trying to make fake eggs? All this stuff. There's a product that comes in a liquid form and it looks like eggs, and you can pour it into a pan and make an omelet with it and make other things with it. And I recently found a do-it-yourself recipe on how to make that. And what it is it's soaked split mung beans. They're yellow mung mm-hmm. beans. And you soak them overnight, and then you put them in a blender and you put plant-based milk in there and you put onion powder and garlic powder and I forget what else, but, and then you blender it, and I just keep it in a shaker bottle, and you can cook it up like an egg patty in your frying pan, or you can stir fry it with vegetables like an omelet, and it actually is pretty amazing. It's got turmeric in it to make it yellow.
Oh, that's so funny.
But it's, when you spend $8 on buying a little container of this stuff that probably has preservatives in it, you know.
Right.
I made it for a couple.
What's it called?
The recipe is, the store-bought stuff is called Just Egg.
Okay.
But you can make it yourself. And I found this Just Egg homemade recipe that works out really well. So we just keep it in the fridge, and the kids that can't have eggs make themselves lunches and quite like it. And it's beans, so it's got to be good for you.
Right. Yeah, that's so fun. That's really fun.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite recipe you wouldn't mind sharing or telling us about?
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, I'm California, so you know, we are so, so blessed here to have such an array of local. We have seasonal things, but we can grow a lot. And I have a garden here in my home. There's a garden at the school that the kids have classes in. And, you know, we have farmers markets all over Southern California. I mean, every day of the week, you can go to one part of the city and find a farmer's market or two or three. But I, you know, anything with the avocado is really fun for me. So the guacamoles, the avocado toast, I have a whole chapter of toasts, and toast is my jam in the book because it's easy to feed like a lot of people with a lot of allergies and preferences. You know, you could do like an avocado toast bar, or, you know, I have a plant-based ricotta. So there's a ricotta and jam toast. So you can have you feed a lot of people with all different kinds of food, unless you've got that one occasional person who's allergic to avocado. And mainly it's a texture thing, I think. But so I think that one go-to, and then the stir fries are great, you know, whatever fresh vegetables you have, amazing, you know. And I don't know about Vancouver, you probably have pretty good produce as well, don't you, because you're West Coast. So yeah, I mean,
yeah, we have just about everything. Yeah,
just it's really a beautiful thing, because you can get all kinds of great stuff Do you have a lot of farmers markets?
We have a fair number, yeah. And they run some, like there's some that are running through the winter. It's more of a summer thing, but yep. We do have some that are running through the winter. Some of the things that are very popular are all different kinds of wild mushrooms.
Oh, yeah.
I know there's people that, you know, I know are like, oh, I have to get to the farmer's market for my big thing of mushrooms, you know, some of the foresty type things. But yeah, there's quite a few farmer's markets here.
And they're finding, you know, I don't know a whole lot about it yet because it's kind of new in my world, but they're finding out a lot of healing properties of different mushrooms, brain food and all kinds of different things. So it's really interesting to me, the mushroom situation. We got a couple of mushroom guys at the farmer's market and they're very passionate about their mushrooms. So it's really cool. It's really cool. And also, you know, this time of year, the citrus is really good, you know, and plentiful, and persimmons and all kinds of great fun apples. And, you know, before we head into the summer of summer fruit.
Yeah. What do you have in your garden?
Well, right now we have had some tomato bushes that have lasted, you know, we usually replant every year, but I'm still getting tomatoes off about four plants. And I have a fig tree. I have a lemon tree, a Meyer lemon tree. I have broccoli, cauliflower, artichokes. So now we're kind of in the process because around March 17th is when you start planting your summer garden here where I am. So we're kind of in the process of pulling stuff out and cleaning. But it's amazing that we still have tomatoes. And lots of them, and they're delicious. You know, it's like we're all so surprised. Like, okay, but yeah, and it, you know, we have had some super winter gardens where we do the kales and the spinach and all that stuff. This year, we just didn't have enough time to really put into it, so we kind of just kept things going. And I have a olive tree, which is really fun that I bought like when it was this big, and now it's huge and beautiful. I actually bought it at Trader Joe's maybe like 5 years ago, and it was so pretty, just this little teeny thing, and it just is planted. It's so big and beautiful. And I have about 10 raised beds that we just fill, and we'll start planting the zucchinis, the squashes. I have a friend who's cultivated all these different peppers, and he's giving us little seedlings for that. So, you know, it's fun to be in a garden community where you can trade seeds and trade stories and trade, you know. My best friend in San Francisco, who is a master gardener, Lisa, she has all this stuff, but most of the stuff that she grows is very different from what I can grow. But it's a really interesting to the stuff that we are kind of common, because she can't do tomatoes because the weather just doesn't permit it. So it's too cold. So I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Good. So if you were going to invite our listeners to do something different this week in the kitchen or in the grocery store, what is it that you would invite them to do? What's easy?
What's easy? All right. What I would invite is to just go pick out whatever favorite veggies you have. So let's just do a salad, and let's do, you know, I used to tell my daughter, it doesn't matter what vegetables go into a salad. She's like, well, I don't like lettuce. Okay, let's do a salad without lettuce. Okay, you know, so, you know, and then take what you like. Like I like a little bit of a sweeter dressing. So if you were to take some garlic, a little bit of Dijon mustard, a little splash of maple syrup, then a little splash of balsamic vinegar and some olive oil, you have a really full flavored vinaigrette that takes literally seconds to whip up. You can do it in a little jelly jar and just shake, 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 shake. And it emulsifies it, so then it's got some weight to it. So it feels like it's a really intense dressing, but it's delicious. Or honey mustard. I mean, I love, you know, we have a honey person at our farmer's market that we get all of our honey from, and you know, a little bit of mustard and honey, olive oil, and it's just amazing. Really good. I use a little maybe rice wine vinegar to kind of balance it out, but really simple, you know, simple is sometimes really good.
I knew I was going to get hungry after talking to you at this time of day. It's like 20 to 5 in the evening.
Dinner time.
That's right. That's right. It's like, oh no, I'm going to have to go make something delicious now after
Absolutely.
That. Oh, well, this has been really great having this conversation with you. And I think that's helpful for people, picking out your favorite and giving them permission to just play with food.
Absolutely.
Until you find what works.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah, that's your permission. That's I charge you with going out. That's your charge. Go out and play. Play with your food. Have some fun.
I love it. Thank you so much, Gwen Keneally, and her new book, Plantastic. And we're so happy you could be with us on Carbon Sessions today.
Thank you for having me. It was delightful.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Carbon Sessions, a podcast with carbon conversations for every day with everyone from everywhere in the world. We'd love you to join the Carbon Sessions so you too can share your perspectives from wherever you are. This is a great way for our community to learn from your ideas and experiences, connect, and take action. If you want to add your voice to the conversation, go to thecarbonalmanac.org/podcasts and sign up to be part of a future episode. This podcast is also part of the Carbon Almanac Network. For more information, to sign up for the emails, to join the movement, and to order your copy of the Carbon Almanac, go to thecarbonalmanac.org. Be sure to subscribe and join us here again, as together we can change the world.